Hello and welcome to another episode of The Advantage. I'm your host, Michael Fiddle. Today is Tuesday, March 26th, and on today's podcast, we are going to be breaking down the Wednesday, March 27th NBA slate, where we have 12 games and 24 teams tipping off across the association. That means we got multiple best bets to work through. Now, notice I say we, because joining me on the other side of the break is going to be a first-time guest on The Advantage, who is actually a full-time professional gambler. And we've been talking as he's been getting more interested in the sports gambling side. So I said, we need to bring your wise brain onto the pod. But let me do the typical housekeeping and remind everyone to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever podcast platform they are listening to. To go to fiddlespicks.substack.com and sign up for my free gambling newsletter. And to go to the Fantasy Basketball International YouTube channel, where you could watch this podcast as a video, or check out their website for so many other great fantasy basketball resources. Let's get it popping.
I'm the type to get shit done. You're the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny getting tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy. That's all that I need.
All right, welcome in, everybody. And let me introduce Drew Johnson onto the podcast, joining me from the East Coast at 11:43 p.m. on a Tuesday night to make his debut appearance on the podcast. First of all, I just have to thank you for the time up front. And then second of all, welcome and how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. I just watched Luka put a layup off the shot clock after a whistle, and it went in. And it was everything I love about Luka.
Does that count?
No. Like he was driving into the lane, got fouled, whistle went, and he just finished by throwing it off the shot clock, and it went straight back down through the net.
I was just like, Luka,
you are basketball Jesus.
As we start this podcast, and I actually want to talk about the poker stuff before we talk about the basketball stuff, because I already know what your picks are for the basketball stuff, and I'm personally more interested in the poker stuff. So for the listeners, I'm actually going to go ahead and drop the timestamps in the description of the episode for when we start talking about basketball stuff, because I understand you might want to go listen to that first, because timing's important in terms of getting these bets in if you want to tail us. And then you could go back and listen to me ask Drew a few questions about being a professional poker player. But again, that's what I'm more interested in. So, Drew, I'm going to start right there, if you don't mind. And let me just ask you, like, what's some of the most typical questions that you get asked as a full-time professional poker player?
I mean, it depends on who you're talking to. If you're talking to people in the gambling space, they just, you know, typically have all the gambling questions like, oh, what's your EV, or like, et cetera, like stuff to that extent. But if you're just talking to like a regular person who has no idea that gambling can be profitable, they just hear the word gambling and just assume that you must lose. So they're like, how is that even possible? And it's like actually surprising that it still happens, because I, you know, have thought that poker has been kind of mainstream now for, I don't know, the better part of two decades for sure, you know? And yeah, that's typically what I get asked the most, though. Like, how do you make ends meet? How do you, you know, and keep your money separate from your gambling and your bills and et cetera, that kind of thing.
So when I start telling people about it, and it mainly happens to me when I'm like at the gym and in the sauna, and all the old men are being like, what do you do, young guy?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I gamble on basketball games. And they look at me like I have four fucking heads, like I'm addicted to gambling, like, had like it must be the riskiest job in the world, that like there's not strategies that are bankroll management and risk mitigation and all of these things, like understanding this. I get faced with two basic assumptions when you run into a casual person and they understand that you're a professional gambler. And tell me if you run into this in the poker world. The first is assuming that you must be super rich because you figured out how to win, and not understanding that risk is tied to reward. So if you assume that someone's reward is millions and millions of dollars annually because they know how to gamble successfully, that means they also have to risk that amount. So they just assume, oh, wow, you must be able to make so much money doing this. It's like, no, because how much I make is tied to how much I'm willing to put up.
Yeah, or how much you have to begin with.
Like, that's another
thing. You've still got to make ends meet. So like,
right.
When I quit work, I just kind of figured out that my hourly rate at poker, playing either in person at the casino or at a home game or online, was better than my hourly rate doing what I was doing. So it was just like, I was doing construction. So it was like breaking my back over it as well.
I've had multiple back surgeries. So that's,
yeah, you know, you've mentioned
speaking,
that.
We're speaking the same language there. And I feel the same way. I've gotten to the point where like, I'm not making tons and tons of tons of money, but I'm making more money than I ever did working my previous jobs. Yeah. And I'm working less hours and I'm able to do it on my own schedule and on my time and answer to myself and take whatever days off I want to, and then be able to now start this little content business and side hustle on the side and see what comes out of it. The second thing is just assuming that you're addicted to gambling.
I think that probably is somewhat true, right? Like, I think that any professional gambler has a bit of that bug. And I think they've gotten good at mitigating that risk factor of that gambling bug, if you understand what I mean.
Maybe. Okay. Now let me explain to you my rationale, and then maybe we could go backwards in time, and then you could tell me that I'm maybe a lone exception to the rule. I'm confused by my own self because I think differently than most people. When I have money on a game, like, I understand that I've put myself in a plus EV situation if I've done my job, which is to get closing line value, potentially play this in both directions, maybe tilted in the direction of where the CLV is. And I set myself up with all those gambling nerd terms, and we understand what I'm talking about.
Yes.
But where I was going with that is like, where was I trying to say, Drew? I just lost my train of thought. I actually prefer to watch games that I have no action on at all, because I understand, like, I'd rather be able to observe. I've been doing this so long in the sports sense that I've seen I'd rather just watch a great basketball game like Mavericks Kings tonight, where I have both sides of the lines played back. It's not really stressful. I needed to land in the middle of 3 or 4 points to hit a middle. It's a low implied, but I have a plus EV. But I understand that's a fucking great game with major playoff implications, and it's going to be a great matchup point between the quick shiftiness of Fox and the slow controlled size of Luka. And so I'm like, I'd rather watch that than Warriors Heat, where like I have more action on and more of a tilted position. And like, I don't want to watch that. I don't really care that my action's there to go watch it. I don't feel like putting money on a game makes a game more interesting for me.
I think I'm the same way with basketball itself. Like, I'd rather, like, for instance, tonight I was watching OKC and the Pelicans. And I wanted to turn it off because I had the Pelicans, like, plus two or something like that. And they were down 20 at one point, and I was just like, this is one of those games tonight. And I had Zion over points as well. But, you know, Zion was getting close to his points total, and I was like, I'll just keep watching, you know, why not? And it turned into a great game that really was like actually how I thought the game was going to go. I just didn't think it would be that big of a swing. You know, you have the speed versus the size and how the different matchups on both sides. And it was really interesting sort of chess match from the coaches, actually. And I think I had more on props in the Lakers Bucks game, and I ended up not watching that, which apparently is a mistake now because it went double overtime.
I could talk about both those games in detail in a minute, and we'll get into that when we start shifting over to the basketball side. I've just always used the idea of, like, I don't really care to watch my money as a way to explain to myself that it's not like this is no sort of addiction if I'd rather not have money on a given game to get enjoyment out of the game. But at the same time, I know that I have an edge here, and I know that I can make more money obtaining these edges than going to my 9-to-5 and planning corporate events or selling, you know, packages or managing client relationships. Or I used to be, Drew, my first job, one of my first jobs was I used to be the guy that followed around the cheerleaders and the hype team for the Nets. And I used to put the t-shirt into the gun that they shot out.
Really?
And I used to, And then I put the thing in and then they shoot it out. And then I refill the, I'm not even shooting the gun. I'm refilling the t-shirt into gun. And I'm there 4 hours before the game, rolling the t-shirt and taping them into those little balls so that they could get shot out. I can make more money not doing that and not having to go roll t-shirts and tape them for 4 hours and be there on the court. So I don't know. That's always interesting. Two other questions that I have for you before we get into basketball. Online versus in-person, how has that changed over the last few years? Do you used to go in-person to tournaments? Have you always done things online?
I've done the majority of my stuff online, probably 75%, 25% break. And I would say typically live is just so much softer. Like, say you're playing online at like a decent stake, so like $100 cash table or $200 cash table or something like that. And you can be pretty much guaranteed at this point that three of the six players, probably four, are going to be well versed in the poker world and be studying and, you know, taking it seriously. And then you're hoping that the other two guys who sit down don't realize that they're just there to gamble, right? Or they're just there
for
to play.
A good time. Right.
And I just think that in casinos, typically, like, especially if you go on like a Saturday or a Sunday, just the amount of people there who are like blackjack players. And then they're like, oh, blackjack's crap tonight. I'm going to go over to the poker table and play. And they just have no idea what's going on. And it's way easier to take, say, like we work in big blinds per 100 hands. Or like, or, and then you can work out an hourly rate. So if you're getting dealt, say 30, 35 hands an hour tops at a casino, probably less than that, really.
Are you playing hold'em?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Almost exclusively. Most places, you know, you might get the odd Omaha game where I'm at, but it's rare.
Okay.
Anyways, you can take, you know, $25, $30 or 30 big blinds per 100 hands out of those games pretty easily, but it works out to about the same amount that you would take out of playing six tables online at, you know, half the stake, but putting in 100 hands an hour per table, so 600 hands an hour and winning.
You're playing multiple tables when you're playing online?
Oh yeah. Oh god, yes. Like I don't think you could make it. I don't think, unless you were playing the highest buy-ins, and even then you couldn't be profitable online anymore without playing multiple tables at a time, for sure.
Interesting. Wow.
Like,
okay.
I shouldn't say that. You couldn't take it seriously as like work, like, because your hourly rate is just so tied to your number of hands per hour. So like if I'm playing a cash session, I'm hopefully playing somewhere between 4 and 10 tables at a time. Like 10 would be my max, but
I like
to hover in the 6 range typically. And
then how from that, Drew, how are you able to, like, how much are you then calculating your edges based on knowing, okay, I have two pair as we go to the river and there's no flush or straight opportunities here, so I know my inherent EV and maybe I have a high card as my fifth card or whatever, right? So I, you know, don't worry about the specific hands. I'm just trying to say, like, you understand your EV to these specific situations just by looking at your cards and your board. How much are you negated your opportunity? Let me know if I'm making this make sense. To understand the people that you're competing against, are you able to be aware of, like, oh, this guy's check re-raised twice in the last three hands?
Oh, God, yes.
So you could pick up other players' tendencies is really what I'm asking, even playing 4 or 5 hands at a time.
So there was always the concept of, at least like even when I first started learning poker, like I said, two decades ago, like a long time ago, that reads were something that you sort of added to theory. And that's the beauty of the game, is like sometimes you just have to throw theory and like E plus EV and all your numbers and stuff out the window and look the guy across you in the eye and decide whether he's bluffing or not, you know. And the art is kind of putting people in those spots more often and making them make the wrong decision more often. And that's what separates the great players from the truly great players. Like, you can be, there's plenty of examples of guys who are good at theory. And then there's, you know, the Phil Hellmuths and the Phil Ivies and the Daniel Negreanus of the world. You know, there's tons of guys like me. Sorry?
When you shouted out those three people, they'll just read the shit out of you?
Oh, like Ivy. Those guys are always at the top of the
yeah, I know the pyramid. Names. I know the exactly. names.
Ivy specifically, like he's on a completely different level than just about everybody. There are plenty of guys like me out there who can, you know, like I'm nothing special. I grind out, you know, enough to make a living a year. So, yep. You know, I'm like, if you've seen the movie Rounders, I'm like Knish, the guy who's been grinding it out in New York for like John Turturro's character. What's his name?
That's a instant rewatchable movie. That's one of the greatest gambling movies. Molly's Game was a recent one that was really good too.
Yeah, that was a really nice.
She's actually now doing stuff in the sports gambling space too. All right, anyways, let's transition to tonight's NBA slate. I could ask you so many questions about this, so maybe when I continue to bring you on, we'll just go a little bit deeper and deeper and pick up where we left off. But
yeah,
I think that point of having reads and then adding them to theory is such a perfect transition over to an NBA slate, because we will read what direction this market is trending, and then we will theorize what the potential CLVs are and your potential EVs are that, but then we have to put in our own basketball angle, and I guess that's the poker reading of your opponent. And it's like, hey, is the read of this going under in this Sacramento Mavericks game? Like last night or this Tuesday night slate, when people listen to this Wednesday, is going to be a perfect example. Is like, I saw that this Mavericks Kings game was trending under from the 236.5 going to go down. So I bet the under first, but my read was that's going to be an over. But I know that I like to set myself up with these middles and the CLVs. So my whole plan was like, okay, I'll go against my position now because I will play into theory and edge. And then I will add up on my read later when I'm doing the playback. And instead of playing this back at 50% because keeping my CLV tilted, I'm going to go with my gut that this is not a situation that's an under spot. It actually might be an over spot. It actually might be a spot where the line might be really sharp and I want to play into a middle. So I went against the common theory and used my read on the game, where yesterday I bet on the Suns Spurs right before tip going the opposite direction of line movement, because we're adding in reads and theory and stacking these things on top of each other. So Drew, when I do these podcasts, and I know you listen to me and Gib on the pod, but I know you don't often watch the show. Of course, everyone can watch the show.
I'm usually playing poker when I'm listening to you guys.
There you go. You can watch the show on Fantasy Basketball International YouTube channel. And I always share the FanDuel odds screen. And that is because I like working through the slate, because I think this has the best interface of an odds screen. And I like how you could work through it. And you could highlight certain games and it'll track, and we could go over the betting split. So, of course, not all of our bets are going to be at FanDuel. We will point out where the best available line is. But as we work through this odds board, we will use it on the screen and go chronologically through these games. Drew, I know I'm ranting here, but I'm going to start us off with grabbing this Magic. It's now at 6.5. I tweeted out and took a picture of the -4 before, and I want to explain why I took that -4 and why I got so far ahead of it to now be 2.5 points above the line movement currently. They play against the Golden State Warriors, who just played tonight on Tuesday against the Miami Heat and beat the Miami Heat in Miami. And then the Warriors were having a back-to-back set against the Heat and then traveling to Orlando to take on the Magic. And when I knew that I liked the side that was not going to be on with the back-to-back, so I was going to fade the team that was on the back-to-back, and I'm looking at this line, before the first game tips off, Drew, I played that Magic minus four before Warriors and Heat even tipped off, and I'm playing a Warriors versus Magic game 30 hours later. So the reason why I was willing to fade the Warriors and the reason why I was willing to grab it early was because I was fading the team that had the back-to-back. Now, in an ideal world, that game is priced with the assumption that they have a normal game against the Heat. It's not super physical. No one gets injured. It doesn't go to overtime. And then you assume that pretty much the whole team's going to be active. But of course, we know that's not how the real world works. There's a chance that Stephen Curry or Draymond or Clay or Kuminga or any one of these key pieces for the Warriors ended up getting hurt. There's a chance that, like the Lakers-Bucks game tonight, this game goes to double overtime and they all end up expending way more energy. And you end up saying, okay, maybe we're going to sit a guy or two on the second night of a back-to-back. Or maybe this guy got hurt and he sprained an ankle, so we're going to rest Steph Curry. So if you're able to fade the team before the first game tips off, if that's already part of the angle and the read that you want, then go ahead and bet it. If I had wanted the Warriors, I would have waited until fourth quarter and hope that I was watching the game and said, okay, I understand these guys didn't get hurt. I got a good sense of how the game went. I have a feeling that in the post-game press conference, they're going to say, looking forward to tomorrow. Boom, 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 boom. I know how this is going to go. Okay, I'll get the bet in before this game closes and finishes and be ahead of it in that sense. But if you're going to take the Magic side and fade the team on the back-to-back, then play it early, 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 because you get the extra boost that, sorry, but injuries happen. You might get lucky that someone on the other team, it's always a weird way to talk about injuries like that, but I think you get the point. Drew, does that make sense about fading the team going against the back-to-back?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, just in general, teams score less. They expend less energy on the second night of a back-to-back. I think the Warriors are playing their third game in four nights. So that's a really good play, I think, and I wish I had seen it, to be honest with you.
Right, third game in four nights. I'm just trying to get ahead of the injury report that ultimately comes out from the post-game press conferences after that Heat-Warriors game. So I was like, okay, let me get ahead of it. And now it's maybe like, do I play back the 6.5 now? What I'll have to do when we wrap up the pod, Drew, is go investigate why it moved to 6.5. Okay, is it because they think Curry's going to be out or something? And then I'll do digging on what Curry said or what the reporters were saying and say, okay, maybe there's a 50-50 chance, so I play it back now because I wake back up in the morning and it's back to four, four and a half. So you have to understand how these lines are going to move in time and start to time and pick them off, right? Would you still play Magic minus 6.5 against the Warriors, or at this point, would you let it ride?
I would let that ride, to be honest with you. I think that's probably right around where that game could easily finish right around there, especially with the Warriors really trying to make that push for at least the play-in. You know, they're finally healthy. They're finally really out there fighting. And if they can pull off a win there and have, they know the Rockets are up against, is it OKC tomorrow? Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that OKC.
If they can pull out a win in Orlando. Warriors. Yeah.
All right, who's your first best bet of the day tomorrow?
My first best bet is I got to fade my own team, my friend. The Toronto Raptors are abysmal right now. We have four starters out. Both Barrett and Quickley were ruled out, though they did practice today. I don't think a line can get high enough against a good team, and the Knicks are a good team and are playing particularly well right now, even without OG. And it's late, man. Names are escaping me.
Do you know where this line opened up? Was 13 the open?
I think it opened at minus -9, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it must have reacted to the Barrett and the Quickley news.
Yeah, because that came out after. So I wasn't looking. I was playing poker tournaments at the time.
Well, honestly, starting to tack on some of my key number stuff to line movement theories, like if it opened at 9 or 9.5 or something, like I like to go money line instead of spread when it's open between 5 and 8 and moved past that number. So this is a situation where it's opened even past the 8 and continued to move. So I'm even okay with playing spreads. I don't like when something opens in the key number zone and then moves out of it. I'm like, okay, at that point, let me take the insurance of the money line. But here, I mean, I think, yeah, Knicks minus 13, they've been smacking teams, and the Raptors can lose by 35 easily.
Yeah, like it's one of those things, like even against Brooklyn last night, Brooklyn's not been a good team, and the Raptors made a game of it, but it was not a good look. The Raptors can't score, and the Knicks can, and it's pretty much that simple.
Let me see if I can go find a better line than 13 on the board. But yeah, we talked about
12 and a half is still available at bet 365. Maybe
I'm gonna quickly check on the Magic side as well. So you could get Magic minus 6 at PointsBet and Caesars, and you could get Knicks minus 12 and a half at BetMGM, Caesars, and bet 365. 13 at FanDuel, PointsBet, DraftKings. So yeah, go grab a 12.5 because this is clearly still going.
Yeah, I would definitely say there's still some room to move on this line, and you can play it back.
It's crazy that we're saying the Knicks is 12.5 point favorite still has room to go is pretty crazy.
Yeah, but I like you just got to fade the Raptors at this current time because there's not much they can do.
All right, I grabbed the Rockets plus 7. Before the OKC Pelicans game tipped off. Now, another great example of exactly what I did with this Magic Warriors. I knew the Thunder were on that back-to-back. This was before the first game for the Thunder even tipped off. I grabbed the Houston Rockets at plus 7. Drew was saying that he's been loving the way the Rockets have been playing recently. Who's not? They've been on absolute tear. I think they've won, 6 in a row now. And I was getting that key number of plus 7 on my Rockets side. I often talk about 7 is the most important number in the NBA because it is the most frequent outcome in the NBA. The second most common is 5. The third most common is 6. That's why this range is so important. So grabbing that plus 7, I had the 3 most important numbers on my side. I had that added benefit that Pelicans-Thunder game could have been really physical or gone to overtime or made the Thunder play until the last minute or potential injury. I don't root for an injury, but it happens and you can get the added benefit of your side given the way and timing of your playing these tickets. So I did all that and I played the Rockets plus 7. Of course, that Thunder Pelicans game was one of the games of the year. Comes down to a series of runs. The Thunder close out on an amazing, I think, 12-0 run to end the game and end up winning by 7. It was an amazing back and forth. And I grabbed, Rockets plus 7, now down to plus 6. I'm going to see if it's available at 6.5 anywhere. But, Drew, I know you've been liking the Rockets. Would you still play them at 6.5? Or do you think it's gone if you've moved off of the 7?
I think it's close. I would say if you can find 6.5, it's probably, man, honestly, moving off the 7, I think you're right. Like it's OKC is, I think they're going to start making that push to, and the Rockets, while they've looked good, they have been having a steady diet. Like I've said, other places, Washington, you know, Portland, just a bunch of bad teams, lots of teams under 500 that they've been blowing out. And I think OKC is considerably better than anybody they've played recently.
So you can get plus 6.5 still at bet 365 and Bet Rivers, but it's already down to 5.5 at DraftKings and BetMGM. So this does have a chance to keep moving further than the 6. Yeah. I don't know if that means, go grab it because that means value, or it's like, this is where we add Reed and Theory and say, okay, Theory might say a line moving from 6 to 5.5 has some value if you grab a plus 6, but then you add in the fact that it already moved from the 7 And then you add in the fact that, okay, you're grabbing a team that's hot, that's played a pretty easy schedule and going against one of their tougher opponents and on the road. The Rockets have been abysmal on the road. So I'll let you guys make that judgment on your own if you're going to still play Rockets plus 6.5 if you see it there. And again, this might go the other way where this ends up landing back at 7 or 7.5 once OKC rules all their players active again. So one of these things that I'm going to have to do is check, why is this line movement taking place? Is it because there might be some questionable guys on the OKC report? OKC came into tonight's game with 0 players on the injury list. Yeah. So I think they should be okay moving forward. They came out of the game unscathed, so I think it should be okay. They're young, they're youthful. But again, we have to ask these questions. I think I'm a point ahead of the market because it was just a tough physical game against the Pelicans.
The other thing is I will just say I like the way OKC matches up against Houston. I think that at kind of at each position, OKC has a better player than the Houston counterpart.
I'm gonna pull certainly up the on game defense. Log. I'm gonna pull up the game log between those two. I think they've played each other pretty close. We're both on the Pacers, Drew. You got them at 2.5. Yeah. I got them at -3. Tell me why you grabbed them at 2.5 when you saw it there.
I think, one, I'm with you on fading the Bulls for the most part at the moment. Two, I looked back at the games between the Pacers and the Bulls, and the last time they played, the Bulls won because DeMar DeRozan had 45. That is unlikely to happen twice. And I like the way the Pacers look right now. 2 big wins in LA, you know, they're making that push towards the playoffs. Chicago's, you know, trying to get into the play-in, they're kind of in that little spot there, but I like the Pacers a lot in this game, and they match up well against Chicago as well. You know, they've got size, they've got strength, they've got speed. I just think this is Pacers all the way.
I think Halliburton is finally starting to get a little bit healthier. You can see he's got a little bit more bounce in his step, and it's kind of buying low on the dip.
Did the threes ever start going last night? Let me tell you.
So, Drew, it's actually still at DraftKings at 2.5 because I grabbed this before it even opened at DraftKings at FanDuel -3. So FanDuel still has it at -3. DraftKings has it at 2.5, and I'm looking at the betting splits right now. There's heavy money coming in on the Indiana side, so this is going to move out to 3.5 or whatever. I might even go and add more on the 2.5 because it's probably another clear CLV gain situation. But yeah, fading these Bulls and riding these Pacers and buying low on these Pacers, Siakam with a few huge games when they went out to the West Coast trip. Obviously they're still on the road now, but Chicago's a really short trip for the Indiana side. I just think this is a team that's going to put its foot on the gas, and Chicago can't keep up anymore.
The Pacers are really starting to figure out how to play with one another too.
Because they changed their identity so much midseason when they lost Buddy Hield, and when they lost, I know Bruce Brown was playing like shit, but when they lost him and Hield, they insert Siakam and then like Nembhard or Nesmith, and they get like way bigger, way slower.
Yeah,
it was an adjustment, but now it's a higher ceiling in the long run. So now they've had that gel time, and it's now like, okay, maybe they're actually better than ever now.
I definitely think that Siakam has carved out his role, and that has really unlocked everybody else because it's required. He's when he's not doubled and he has somebody who's smaller than him, that's another thing about what I really like about this matchup is Siakam is taller than everybody but one or maybe two guys on Chicago, and he just does so much better against smaller players. He's really gotten defenses to key into him, and I think it's opened up things for everybody else, just especially with his play recently.
Yeah, and I know Halliburton's had like shoulder stuff, but this thing is a hamstring, so I think the shot's just going to start falling. He said he's never had a slump like this in his life, so you got to imagine it starts.
Well, I think he went 5 for 6 or 6 for 7 last night, or something like that. I look for him to also continue that.
I have a rule, Drew, where you can't make or break a streak in one night. So you have to do it in back to backs. Like I'm one money 14 of my last 16 days. And it looks like I'm going to be, because of a Lakers double fucking overtime, causing it to land on 234 and going over. I'm glad we're not spending too much time, because I would just be complaining about tonight's games. Yeah. I'm going to end up losing and going 14 for my last 17 nights. I'm still hot as fuck. The streak is still incredible. Yeah. So Halliburton's still a little cold and he needs to shake off the rust. Hopefully this will be the game that he finally gets it done. Drew, you said you were also on Nuggets minus, what'd you say, 6.5?
I got them at 6.5, yeah.
So you got them before that key number of 7.
Yeah.
I'm going to look on the board. You explain why you like the Nuggets. They're 7 everywhere, and 7.5 started to pop up a lot of places. So I actually think still grabbing the 7 as it moves on to 7.5 is good value. Obviously, holding a 6.5 is extreme value. Drew, why did you grab the 6.5?
Well, one, because exactly like you were talking about, the 7 is an important number. And two, Bradley Beal ruled out for the Suns. The Suns not playing well. Nurkic is also out. Now, that could be a good thing in like addition by subtraction. We'll see how that plays out. But it also means one less body to throw at Jokic. Now, both Jokic and Murray are again listed as game time decisions. I think they lean towards playing this game for two reasons. One being that it is the Phoenix Suns. This is a team they could see in the playoffs. This is the time to really clamp your foot down. Let it be known who's the boss in this matchup. And two, OKC won tonight. So now they're still tied in the loss column. OKC plays the Rockets tomorrow night. Again, I think that OKC probably comes out of there with a W. Whether the Rockets cover the spread or not is to be seen. But I think the Nuggets got to play their guys.
That's a good point that OKC plays again, coming off a win, get the W, tie up in the loss. I've also talked about this. The reason why the Nuggets want that one seed is because playing against the potential eighth seed and the chance that the Lakers or the Warriors end up getting that last play-in spot, that's such an easier matchup than playing against the Mavericks or the Suns, who kind of looking like you're in that territory to begin with, or the Kings now, because the Mavericks are looking like they're going to beat them tonight. So the Suns just beat the Nuggets in their last game. So you got some revenge angle. You got home court in altitude. Yeah. You got the Suns dealing with more injuries. You get the key number where you'll blindfully play it from 6.5 as you see it moving on to 7. But now you add in these, you know, these reads onto the top of the theory, and it's a no-brainer. So that's a beautiful bet. I still think playing the 7 while it's moving out to 7.5 is good. If you see the 7.5, that's the point at which you skip it, or you just play the money line and you don't juice up your exposure, and you don't play 3 units on the money line to win 1 unit. You just play 1 unit normally and you bring home less, but you take the insurance if you still like that side. Drew, I got one more before we wrap up and get out of here. And that was Clippers minus 5.5. It's at 6, but it's at minus 108 juice. So I like playing low vig. You could get 5.5 at Caesars, BetMGM, and Bet365 right now. This Clippers team's been playing like shit basketball, but I think this is a little bit of a revenge game, and I'm all in on fading the recent like little boost that the 76ers have gotten. They had a few unprecedented high efficiency games out of Maxi and Oubre and Tobias. Like, I don't think that's going to continue. I think the Clippers come into this game knowing that they need to get a dub, and they're going to blow the Clippers out of the water. So I still like it at the 6. This is a game where I might be playing some alternate spreads and playing minus 9.5, minus 11.5, minus 13.5, and playing the Clippers to just smack the 76ers in the mouth.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. The Clippers are finally healthy. They got Westbrook back. They got Powell back. Everybody's... they're good, and they've just lost two pretty heartbreaking games. I think you got to look for them to really gut out a win here for sure.
And they're back in Philly, so a little revenge for Harden.
Yeah, for Harden.
A little bit of a debut for Paul George, because everyone's linking Paul George to Philadelphia 76ers this offseason in the rumors. I think you're crazy if you think that's going to happen. But I wouldn't be surprised if Paul George steps up tomorrow, puts on a little bit of a show, because these players know the storylines around them. We have 6 different five different spreads that we are on tomorrow. We have Orlando Magic -4, New York Knicks -12.5, still playable. Houston Rockets probably worth skipping at the 6.5 or 6. Now, Indiana Pacers still definitely playable at the -2.5 on DraftKings. And Denver Nuggets, we talked that through. Maybe you play the 7 because it's going to 7.5. Maybe you play the money line and take the insurance, or maybe you just skip it if it's at 7.5 consensus when you listen to this podcast. Drew, thank you for the time. Is there anything that we need to cover before we get out of here?
Just definitely be on the ball with those injury reports, for especially for Joker and Murray on that Denver Nuggets game. I think that's going to be very important.
Thank you for the time. I had a whole host of other poker questions related for you, but I feel like, honestly, I could ask you that for like hours and hours because I'm so fascinated by it. I'd love to know about how increased legalization has changed things. I'd love to know how the COVID era changed things. So we'll definitely have you back on. You got big shoes to fill, my friend, because Gibby, who was unable to join us tonight, has been 6-0 the last 3 weeks. So the goal is always for me to win more than I lose and for my guests to sweep the board. So definitely take Drew's and proceed with caution on mine. Thank you, as always, to everyone who tunes in. Be reminder to check out fiddlespicks.substack.com. When I am not doing a podcast and I am not speaking my picks, I send them up in free write-outs. Thank you again. Peace out.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.